This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Texans trade a seventh-round pick yesterday for Christian Kirk, former Jacksonville Jaguar wide receiver. He had 1 year left on, has 1 year left on his deal. The Jags were ready to cut him to save some money underneath the salary cap. He's due $16.5 million this year. Fortunately, most people it feels like fortunately is an appropriate adjective or adverb here. They're happy that Nick Caserio and James Gladstone, the GM of the Jags, were able to come together and put a deal together here to allow the Texans to send them a seventh-round pick. If Kirk were to get released, he'd have been a free agent. That gets a whole lot tougher to get him in the building. Clearly, they really like Christian Kirk. I would be curious kind of if Christian Kirk is a guy that Caserio has had sort of a high grade on for a long time.
Like, oh, yeah.
He liked coming out of A&M back in the day, and now here's an opportunity, albeit at a salary that feels a little bit high right now for what he's been the last couple years, Kirk, mostly due to injuries, but just a chance to get him in the building and improve your receiving core, man. They are a better team today than they were this time yesterday.
Right. Yeah, the biggest thing with Christian Kirk is that over the last couple years, he's been banged up a lot. He's missed somewhere between 14 and 16 games due to injuries over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And none of them are all that alarming. Last year was a broken clavicle, so that's just a broken bone that'll heal. The year before that, it was a core muscle injury. That could be a little bit more concerning because those seem to have a way of being, you know, ongoing issues. For whatever it's worth, he hasn't had that issue since 2023. But when the Jaguars first signed Christian Kirk back in 2022, they faced a lot of criticism for it. People thought it was too lucrative, and he came out and played really, really well. He had a career year in 2022. Since then, it's been a combination of injuries, but then the addition of Calvin Ridley and then Brian Thomas this year, where the targets weren't going to be the same as they were in 2022. I think the upside here is very big. The downside is minimal, because it's a short-term contract. Mm-hmm. We'll see. That could change depending on how they tweak the contract.
Yeah.
They're going to want to push some of that money off into the future. It can still remain, for all intents and purposes, a one-year deal. But who knows? Maybe they do give him some kind of an actual extension.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. The broken collarbone doesn't scare me. I'd be more nervous, Seth, if the broken collarbone was 2 years ago and the core muscle was last year. That it's kind of flipped around, and as you pointed out, it's been 2 years removed. Like, a broken collarbone is that's bad luck. You just landed on it. I don't see somebody breaking a collarbone as necessarily meaning that they're injury prone. Healthy, I love the pickup. I love that this is a guy who's a true slot. He's got a role on this team. Is this a tell at all on Nick Caley and how he views the world offensively, or is this
I don't want to read too much into it other than that, okay, there's some offensive coordinators that just, you know, we saw this with Kubiak for a long time. It's not like Kubiak desperately needed a classic slot type receiver. David Anderson was probably the closest that it ever came to having a guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of teams these days will just, they put big guys in there. They don't worry about it. He's a classic slot receiver and will, you know, lines up 75% of the time in the slot. Yeah, it's hard not to think about how effective the Patriots were back when Caley was there with guys like Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
At the very least, we know that he's willing to have it. What I like is that, man, last year the Texans just did not develop their short game or their quick game. When everything indicated that that's what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. You just did not see these tracer bullets over the middle, attacking soft spots and zones. You didn't see that develop. So I think at the very least, Nick Caley might be wired a little bit differently than Bobby Slowick.
Okay, there's a few things I'm wondering with this trade. The first one is, how do we think Christian Kirk feels about this? I have to imagine he's very excited about this opportunity.
He doesn't have to face Azeez Alshire twice
either. Well, he doesn't have to do that. Yeah, right. He can go over the middle without fear.
We got to ask him. And also that. We get to ask him a question about that whole ordeal.
About the Trevor Lawrence, Azeez Alshire thing. That's a great point. I would imagine just purely from a football standpoint. I mean, look, he's going from the team that's picking fifth in the draft to a team that's actually won a playoff game each of the last 2 years with a young, I think still ascending quarterback in C.J. Stroud, a new OC that probably has all kinds of great ideas on how to use him. He's coming back to Texas. Maybe the biggest thing, Seth, is that instead of getting cut and being thrown out there in the bin with a lot of other maybe second and third tier receivers, not knowing how much of the available money out there next week you're going to get, he at least knows, it would appear, I mean, unless the Texans trade him and ask him to take a pay cut, and I don't see that happening, he knows he's going to get his $16 million this year,
It's impossible to know exactly how he might feel about it because this is a year where there aren't a lot of realistically enticing wide receivers. It's going to be a seller's market because Chris Godwin is going to command a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It looks like Tampa's probably going to pay whatever it takes to get him back, or at least that's what the scuttlebutt is.
Yeah.
DK Metcalf is a guy you're going to have to trade high draft picks and pay a bunch of money to. So we don't know exactly how that's going to go with DK. Like, DK Metcalf will not be simply released by the Seahawks the way Christian Kirk
has. No.
So that's a hefty, hefty price. So after DK Metcalf and Chris Godwin, it comes down to a lot of guys like Christian Kirk and Devontae Adams and Stephon Diggs who are either not marquee guys or they're aging. But they'll all, because of the market, I think, because people are so desperate for wide receivers these days, I think there's a very good chance that all those guys get the kind of eye-popping or at least eyebrow-raising numbers.
Eyebrow-raising, yeah.
Yeah, like we'll be like, oh, wow, it costs that much? Like Cooper Kupp, I talked to Texans Cap about this. He thinks that Cooper Kupp's realistic value, and these guys break it all down by all the things
comps
that we predict.
Yeah.
Like he thinks Cooper Kupp should be $9 to $12 million a year.
Should be.
But I think we might very well raise an eyebrow over some team that has cap space and says, nope, get him in here. We want him.
And that's why I think the Diggs era is over in Houston. I think Stephon Diggs' price tag is going to be at the very least in the same aisle as what they're going to pay Christian Kirk this year. I don't know that this team, I think this team has the wherewithal to go get a couple of guys in that $15, $16 million range and find the cap space to go do it. I don't know that it's smart to do it if you're going to have two splurges like that, to do it at the same position with very similar guys. Like Diggs has a similar skill set and dimensions to Christian Kirk.
Right. Yeah, I think now if you're trying to build your roster out, your basketball team of wide receivers, you want a guy who's longer and can play on the outside, an outside receiver, to complement Nico Collins, if you're going to draft one, especially. And probably not feel necessarily desperate to get one in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy like Noah Brown is a good complement to Nico Collins, especially if you have, especially with Christian Kirk in there. So before I started rambling, my main point about the wide receiver market is that Christian Kirk was probably at the point where he was expecting to get cut and be a free agent. And his expectations for the deal he could get might have been a lot higher than this one-year deal.
Maybe.
So he might come to Houston maybe feeling great about C.J. Stroud, but also feeling like, hey, guys, what the hell? You know, I was about to get a three-year deal somewhere, and now I'm back in the same position I was. So we'll see. We'll see how they rework his deal.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
They're going to have to at least restructure it to create some space.
That's undoubtedly so. I feel very confident in saying $16.5 million ain't hitting the cap this year. In fact, I think I even saw a tweet from Aaron Wilson that talked about voidable years that are in this contract right now.
Uh-huh.
So it may be something that was already baked into it when it got, you know, that contract when it got here. But 100%, like they ain't $16 million on the cap on Christian Kirk in 2025. The other thing that I think is interesting about this is, how are they feeling in Jacksonville about this trade today? I might have to do a little digging about that. If I were a Jacksonville fan, I would feel a little bit. Now, keep in mind, this GM they're bringing in, who we like to call the Magnificent Gladstone, burying you under his magical words of 14 letters or more, he's viewed as the boy wonder, and a lot of Jags fans take exception with how he's being poked fun at on the internet. They feel like they found their guy who's going to rebuild this team because of all the mid-round successes that the Rams had while he was in the building. The only deal we have to go off of so far is this trade he made with Nick Caserio, and I can tell you right now that if I were in the shoes of the team chasing the Houston Texans, if I was a fan of that team, this trade, more than anything, helped facilitate Christian Kirk getting to the Texans. And the Jags are just taking pocket change, seat cushion money, to allow the Texans to make themselves, I think a lot of people feel, if Christian Kirk is healthy, materially better on offense, more dangerous on offense. You just took the team that you're chasing and allowed them in the short term to get better at the mere price of a seventh round pick that they'll probably recoup with a compensatory formula at some point here, just by letting free agents walk. That would be concerning for me if I was a Jags fan that my new GM thought this was a good idea.
All right, I think if you're Jags radio host, I think you feel that way. If you're Jags fan, I think what you think is that, hey, for one, you lean into the Rams resume big time. Because he was there was there from 2016 on. You ignore that Les Snead was the GM that entire time. But you lean hard into that. And you say, like, listen, the guy's focused on the Jaguars, and he's going to make the decisions that make that team better. If the goal is to win the division, then that means that you do things better than every other team in the division, including just accumulating assets, doing whatever. There are a lot of GMs that have no issues with trading within the division at all, because it's like, all right, what am I going to duck the... If I think it's good for this team, I'm not going to worry about that. We're getting to the point where I don't have to worry about the little moves that team makes. We're going to do it better.
I get it. It's just that the only thing you're getting is like the 268th pick in the draft 2 years from now.
Yeah, but it all factors in. You know what? I mean, it's all the points add up. All the little things add up.
Yeah.
I mean, Nick uses these late round picks for stuff just such as this. So it's one asset you have to use on a maneuver like this down on the road.
Do you think in Jacksonville that they're saying in Gladstone we trust right now? That's always the big... That's the big label that you get as a GM that's sort of the validator. Is if you have a fan base, I mean, it was that way with Daryl Morey for a long time, and Morey we trust, even though it never resulted in an appearance in the NBA Finals even.
Sean, let's look at let's look at any mythology. Mm-hmm. Let's look at any world religion and ask yourself, hey, this story doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. People don't fervently believe this, do they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And now at this very they are born again Gladstone in Jacksonville.
Okay? Born again Gladstones. Yes. They've seen the light.
You just put the promise up in there. Whatever the promise of your given mythology is, it's you can latch onto it.
That's tremendous. And
you will raise down entire villages to justifying it with your beliefs.
That's tremendous. All right.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, real quick, before I get to the numbers on two recent Super Bowl teams and how they're attacking or not attacking roster and player retention, a lot of people weighing in on your first car, Seth. Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. They love that you caveated that it had a sunroof. Quote.
It was a Mazda 82 Mazda GLC with a sunroof, hand crank.
With a sunroof, ! Texter says, my brother's first car was a Ford Escort GT. He always was sure to include GT after.
GT.
Make sure they knew it was a GT.
Well, you know what? I upgraded to a Pontiac Le Mans, which was a weird car because at one point the Le Mans was kind of a muscle car. And then the new Le Mans was... the exact opposite. It was like the Pontiac version of an Escort.
Yeah.
And this was even worse than the Mazda GLC. It was just newer. I think I paid $2,000 for that one.
Okay. Look at you.
Yeah.
Wow. What did you pay for the first one? 500?
500.
Look at you paying four times what you paid for your first car. had an 82, Texter, had an 82 Mazda GLC as well. Very excited.
Oh,
multiple
nice.
Exclamation points. Yeah, Mazda bros.
We're like Eskimo brothers.
Yes, yeah, Mazda bros. Got 10 kids in there with the sunroof open, and after I took out the home stereo speakers that I put in. LOL. First car, 1980 and a half. Okay, so midway through 1980, I guess. Datsun by Nissan, 200SX, SE, 5-speed, pretty fast. Bought it from a neighbor for $1,000. Second car, 73 Volkswagen thingy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that, man. All over the place.
The Volkswagen rabbits were big amongst high school kids.
Rabbits.
Like old beat up rabbits were big back in the day.
Yep, for
Emily
sure.
Emily Weaver, one of my girlfriends, she drove a Volkswagen rabbit.
Look at her, Emily Weaver. She sounds hot.
She was.
Yeah.
Hottest girl in the school. She's out of my league. I blew it.
That's all right. Yeah. You did okay. You did
but she
fine.
Was older than me, you know? Like, I was her little plaything, I think.
Yeah. Your fling. Boy toy. You were her boy toy.
I was.
First car, yellow 77 Mustang 2 with DIY T-tops. Oh, wow. That's impressive.
DIY T-top. Oh, like he took
his own T-tops. Like he took a
sawzall
like
and
metal
made
saw.
His own. Yeah.
That's hardcore.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That is a manly thing to do.
He has a lot of
people. He made his own T-tops.
His own T-tops, dude.
That had to have leaked like hell.
All right. Hey, brother, I'm taking your number down just so you know. We can see everybody's phone number on the text page. I'm taking your number down. If I ever need anything done around the house with my car or whatever, you are the DIY man that I want. A metal saw and making his own T-tops.
I love just the thought of that guy out in his driveway. His mom looking out the window and be like, oh, this idiot. What is he doing?
Well, that's not going to be good for resale. Oh, my God. That's tremendous. That is tremendous.
Yeah, do they still have T-tops in non-luxury vehicles?
If they don't, this guy will make them for you.
Yeah.
If they don't, get this guy's card. He'll make them for you. We can still saw metal in 2025. I'll tell you that right now.
Damn it.
All right. So Warren Sharp posted this at Sharp Football, and he said, this is wild. The Bengals and Eagles both signed their quarterbacks to extensions in 2023. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is the Texans are about to be, at least from a roster construction standpoint, the Bengals and the Eagles. From the standpoint of teams that have a lot of very good players that they've drafted, that they've nurtured in-house, or that they've brought in maybe like the Eagles did with Saquon and want to keep around. It's all about keeping your own when it comes to what I'm about to say here. Now, hopefully they're like both of these teams in that they make a Super Bowl in the next couple of years. Bengals made it a few years ago. Eagles defending Super Bowl champs. Warren Sharp, this is wild. The Bengals and the Eagles both signed their QBs to extensions in 2023. Jalen Hurts with the Eagles, Joe Burrow with the Bengals, and they both made well over $50 million in average annual value or are making on their new extensions. Since then, the Bengals have re-signed one player to a contract of over $40 million overall. Overall money. I'm guessing maybe guaranteed money. Logan Wilson. The Eagles have re-signed in the same time period, Seth, 8 players to contracts with values of greater than $40 million. A.J. Yeah. Brown, Landon Dickerson, Lane Johnson, Devontae Smith, Jordan Mailata, Zach Bond, Darius Slay, and Saquon Barkley. We should point out they cut Darius Slay earlier this week. I think it's also worth pointing out 3 of those are offensive linemen and 2 of those are wide receivers. You know, kind of a, you know, worth noting.
You know what? It's interesting because it's easy right now to just point to the Eagles and say, hey, that's the way to do it. And there's different ways to do it. The Patriots were a team that was always super, super careful with their money, wouldn't spend liberally in free agency or anything, would let veterans walk out the door. They did have the benefit of having one of the all-time best defensive coaches and having a guy named Tom Brady on their team. So it's hard to follow that model to the core, but there's other teams that have done it really well being more conservative. There's other teams like the Eagles that they've got the guy who might be the Tom Brady of GMs and Howie Roseman.
Yeah.
I think it's fair enough to say that the Bengals, at no point in the past 30 years has anybody thought that the Bengals have operated anywhere close to the way Howie Roseman or Bill Belichick have operated.
Never.
It gets frustrating if you're a Bengals fan that like, all right, man, I appreciate you being careful with your money and everything, but my God, we've got players beating down the doors to get the hell out of here or that don't want to come here. And they've spent more aggressively, though, over the past, since before they got Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
They don't want to, it doesn't seem like they've got it in them to really make that one last push.
Yes.
The way the Eagles have done it various times.
Well, they're giving Trey Hendrickson, one of the best pass rushers in the league, permission to go find a trade right now. I mean, my guess is that wouldn't happen on Howie Roseman's watch in a million years. They would find a way to keep the best, the biggest sack artist of the last 2 years.
The Bengals are, they've spent, they're like middle of the road. I'd have to look at it as Texans cap to be specific about this. They haven't been a stingy franchise.
Lately.
I think it's right. No, and they've over the last several seasons, they're about middle of the pack in terms of how much cash they've spent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just a different realm when it comes to paying guys that are your own.
Yeah.
And they seem to be like they're still stingy in some regards.
Yeah.
Where it feels like, all right, they don't want to reward the guys. They're very grudging to reward the guys who have demonstrated that they're worth the high draft pick and everything else.
I don't want to get too deep in the salary cap muck. The salary cap is a real thing, despite what you may hear on the internet out there. It does exist. However, there are ways to work your way around it if you are willing. For teams that are willing to spend a ton of cash in the now, which the Bengals are not, to your point, in the upper tier of those teams. They're more free spending than they used to be, but not nearly as free spending as others. The Eagles and Jeffrey Lurie, their owner, and Howie Roseman, their GM, in the state they're in right now, where they're maybe the most talented team top to bottom roster-wise in the NFL, they're willing to go balls to the wall to give Saquon another $40 million, to give Zach Baum $50 million, 34 guaranteed, whatever it is. That requires an owner who is willing to, in the short term, have to spend a lot of cash. The cap will be the great equalizer over time, but the Eagles are spending a ton right now to jam it into way down the road credit card. I guess my question would be, what's our sense on the Texans, both from a standpoint of Nick Caserio and his, and by proxy D'Amico Ryans, because they work in tandem with one another, but particularly Caserio because he's responsible for the cap. What's his appetite for doing what Howie Roseman does and kicking the can down the road with a lot of big star players? Because that they may need to do that to keep all the guys that they have right now. They've got a lot of guys, and the other thing, Seth, real quick, and what is Cal McNair's appetite for spending the short-term cash necessary to do all these things?
I feel like they've already demonstrated that Casario's strategy is to just go ahead and give big money, but with lots of guaranteed money, but on shorter-term contracts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question would be, okay, when... So they're totally willing to spend.
Yep.
And I think Cal has demonstrated that he's very much willing to spend and listen to the football people,
yes,
which was a bad thing when Jack Easterby was around and Bill O'Brien was a co-GM. That was a bad thing. But it was still good that you had an owner who was willing to let his football people do football things. You just got to find the right football people. So I think that Cal's going to be willing to do whatever Caserio wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the real question is, hey, Caserio has spent big money on shorter term contracts. He did already renegotiate Deshaun Watson. Or no, that was Easterby. Sorry, he didn't do that. So Easterby did Deshaun Watson's deal. But Cal demonstrated he was totally willing to pay Deshaun Watson on that third-year extension.
Yep.
So I'm not worried about that at all. I don't think that if the Texans get to a point where, hey, they make a couple of AFC championship games, but you've got these guys coming up, I think they'll make that either ill-advised or courageous push into spending money into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cal's been around long enough now to know and understand also that, sometimes it doesn't work out. You do this, and sometimes you're the Eagles, or sometimes you're like the various other majority of teams where it doesn't work out and you got to hit a reset a couple years down the road.
I think in terms of the appetite to do whatever it takes, cash-wise and financially, to win, I think the McNairs skew way more towards the Jeffrey Lurie end of this fictitious spectrum we've just created here with this Warren Sharp tweet. If it's the Bengals-Eagles spectrum we're talking about, the low end and the high end, and I know the Bengals are better than they used to be, but for purposes of this conversation, contenders, I'll put them at that end because they've only retained one of these guys. It's about to be two or three once they sign Ja'Marr Chase and presumably T. Higgins. I think they're way more at the Eagles' end of the willingness to do that than they are the Bengals' end of the way to do that.
I had a really interesting conversation with Eric Winston once when, I can't remember if it was right after he retired or while he was still with the Bengals, But he said that the Bengals were such a weird team because they were so stingy, and yet at the same time, they would hold on to guys like Eric Winston. Eric was talking about himself, like, with a lot of humility, basically saying, like, I the last couple of years, I've been thinking about retiring, but the Bengals kind of just, like, if they like you, they'll keep you around. And I think what Eric was saying was, I don't think I'm worth the money they're paying me. And I'd kind of like to retire, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And though it wasn't a lucrative contract or anything, he was a blue-collar player that they liked as a veteran, and they kept him around longer than probably a lot of other teams would have.
That's interesting.
It's a weird – everything about the Bengals is weird always.
Was that when Winston was the president of the Players Association?
Yeah.
Or was that – okay. Because that may have been one of those.
Because I think he was right up until he retired.
Yeah, that may be one of those for the Brown family, the owners of the Bengals. Let's keep our friends close and our enemies closer.
Yeah, they probably had his phones tapped.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Hey, Eric, we're going to give you $5 million, and here's a new cell phone as well. Now, it's on our account.
I could see Bengals ownership being like so antiquated. They're like, well, we can't. No, just tap his landline. No, we can't be paying for it. It costs a lot more to tap his cell phone. We don't want that.
They have a big Bengals stripe van outside his house with three Brown family members with headphones on in there, like in the
listening to nothing but calls from telemarketers. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. Talking to Eric Winston, talking to his mom or something like that. Let's see. As much as we talk about football, people just want to weigh in on what their first cars were. I had a 79 Camaro with a straight 63 speed on the floor that my dad got. I don't even know what this means. That my dad got drunk and bought for $100 for me. Okay, part I know what means. Your dad got drunk and bought you a car for $100. First car in 91 and 81, Oldsmobile 88. Known ass junkmobile. Had to start it with a screwdriver.
Man, I miss those days. The cars that you would start with a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Those were the best. Yeah. You see that a lot on farms on old equipment. You got to start it with a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It was in no danger of being stolen except by somebody who knew you.
What's the number of years difference between the actual year you got your first car and the year that the car was actually manufactured to where you can maintain that you are living a blue collar lifestyle? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like
at least 10, right?
Yeah. I think 10 feels. Yeah. Like if it's 1995, you're like, yeah, my first car was a brand new 95, whatever. I'm like, spoiled.
That's why I felt like I got such a good deel on my 82 Mazda GLC. Cause that would have been in 1992. I think.
10 years.
So like it was doing all right. It had over 100,000 miles on it, but it was an 82.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mine was I had an 11 year Delta. I got my license in 85 and I had a 74 Plymouth Gold Duster.
You just don't, there's one thing that you just don't see as many hoopties around these days.
You don't.
They started manufacturing cars so that they don't rust as easily. The water drains better and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they just, we've gotten spoiled. I need to see more children driving incredibly unsafe vehicles.
Yeah.
I remember driving in my mom's car when I was like 6 or 7 years old. We had a car that the floor in the back seat had rusted out.
The floor on my Duster had rusted out.
Yeah, you could see the road as you're driving along.
Dude,
yeah.
When it rained, there would be drops coming out from like underneath the part underneath the steering wheel where my feet were.
Oh, you'd get spray coming up?
Like drips coming down like towards my feet, like out from like underneath where my feet were underneath the steering column there.
Yeah.
Incredibly unsafe. Like electrical stuff dangling from wires, right? Why my parents ever let me drive this thing? I have no idea.
Well, there was so much more of a sense of adventure when you'd go on a road trip because you didn't know if you were going to make it.
Dude.
And if you broke down, there were no cell phones.
Driving to school was a road trip for me. One time, my mom got so mad. My car just died in the middle of a busy intersection near our school. And I just left it there and called my mom from the payphone in the lobby. I'm like, Mom, you got to call AAA and come get my car. I put the hazards on and I walked to school. I was not missing class on behalf of that
car. You left it
car.
In the middle of the road?
I managed to veer it over to the side, sort of. It was disrupting traffic, though. Me and my brother got out and walked to school. What else am I going to do?
Why, you could have pushed it off the road.
There, trust me, there was no.
Oh, like, there was no way to
there was
do
no,
it. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I got you.
There was nowhere to put it. It wasn't like in the middle of the intersection, but it was disrupting. It was like in the right lane, and everybody's having to kind of squeeze around. And if you wanted to go right, you had to go around the Pendermobile to turn right.
Yeah,
at that intersection. Keep texting them in, man. We're highly entertained by everybody's first vehicle.
What happened? What happened with the car? Did your mom set up a tow truck?
She did. She called AAA and got it done. My mom.
You got to school and then called your mom from... Did you call from a payphone or did you go to the office to use the school phone?
Payphone. Yeah, payphone. Okay. Payphone right in the lobby. There were three bank of payphones right there in the lobby of old Simsbury High School.
Yep, I remember. But it's usually outside the school office.
Yes.
Sometimes you could go... Sometimes you could make a call from the school office for certain things. Otherwise, you had to use the payphone.
Yeah, I was rolling in dough back then. I just dropped the dime in the payphone. I spent the dime on it, man.
That's right. You could make a phone call for a dime.
A dime, yeah.
I was thinking it was a quarter, but you could do it for a dime. Yeah.
A quarter, you get a little more time if you were calling long distance. Kids, gather around. This is a campfire.
Gosh, I haven't gotten a collect call in forever.
I'm giving you one today.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. If you're just checking in, the breaking news on the day, Shaq Mason has been, or is, I keep saying this, I want to make sure I say this right. I believe according to Aaron Wilson, various other people have confirmed that Shaq Mason is expected to be released, is the problem, as the phrasing that has been used at the start of the new year. So that's going to make right guard very much. It was already a place that I think we all felt needed to be upgraded, but that's very much a place now that they need to address. Before we move along on this program, let's take it to the phones. Larry Stafford, what's happening, my man?
What's going on, Reggie, J-Lo, Figgy? How y'all doing today, man?
Terrific.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, it's Friday, man, and J-Lo, I'm trying to decide, do I smoke me a Cohiba and drink me some Crown Reserve or some Crown Limited Edition because Shaq Mason ass is gone? I don't know which one of them to just light up with this stick, man, because...
You got
to
go Cohiba, man. It's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, we definitely go smoke the best, man, because if you gonna do your boy like that kind of favor on a Friday, I'm going to light this whole damn place on fire, man, because look, it was time for Shaq ass to get out the way he was letting my quarterback get hit, and y'all didn't need Aaron Wilson and all them boys to tell you. I told y'all ass Shaq was supposed to be gone after they brought his ass back from the injury list. He shouldn't have came back dead. Mm-hmm. Look, man. Nick Caserio and D'Amico and the beautiful Hannah and old Panky Ring, man, they understand what this is. If you got windows in your house, your ass needs to open all of them up. Because C.J. Stroud is giving you a window for an opportunity to take your ass to places that we've never been to in the history of the city of Houston. That's going to the Super Bowl. And so you got to make these kind of moves and these kind of pickups and things like that to finally cross the barrier of what you're trying to do. That Christian Kirk signing, I might have to smoke me a little bit something stronger than that Cohiba because that just puts the slot position just right in good hands as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not worrying about all the injuries and all that other stuff. This gives us somebody that can play the role that Tank should have been playing from the get-go and that can make plays in the middle of the field so number 12 can eat his ass off and we can still go get us another big-time playmaker in the draft. And also, when you make these kind of moves, what it's telling your fan base, damn, we're doing all this. Y'all ass better get on board with getting us a new stadium and knocking that old ragged-ass Astrodome down. Because see, this is big boy stuff now, J-Lo. Now we're moving into the big leagues where we're trying to do stuff that can make the city proud and make the city feel like it's supposed to be as far as an international city. And I know I'm getting a little long-winded, but I have to say these things, man, because here's the thing. As an avid Texan fan, as somebody that's been a Houstonian all my life, I know what the value of a Super Bowl will mean to this city as far as our football franchise, and I know Pinky Ring understand that, and I know Hannah understand that, and I damn sure know D'Amico understand it. So now that all these moves are coming about, I really want them to go get Jonathan Allen to go pick up everybody, damn it. It's only money, and it ain't my damn money, so I don't give a damn how much they spend. Go get somebody that's going to get us to the promised land. Last thing before I let y'all go, let me say this. I love the fact that LeBron James checked Stephen A. Smith ass today, too. Here's a couple things that I'm going to tell all you youngsters out there that are listening. And y'all might want to perk up. Here's what men care about. Money, ass, and food. Here's what men won't let your ass play with. My money, my ass, and my kids. Stephen A. been toeing the line and teetering across that line talking about that man's son, and LeBron checked his ass. So keep giving him some money, some ass, and some food, and your ass will be all right. Reggie, I got a stick for your ass, too, and I'll holler.
I appreciate you, my man. That's, yeah, yeah.
You got a what
that's
for a what?
Yeah, there's a wild statement. Hey, man, Larry, somebody said on the YouTube, when isn't Larry long-winded? But, yeah, there was a few moments in there for Larry where I was like, hey, wait, the phrasing could be a little bit better there.
The first 80% of Larry's call I totally agree with. After that, we'll see. Hey, man, and we're going to dig into this a little more. This isn't just big in terms of the offensive line and Shaq Mason. I think there's going to be another big shoe to drop, and I said big on purpose. So we'll dig into that.
What are you talking about?
I'll let you know, man. I'll let you know. But
why not now?
You want to talk about it now?
I mean,
we can talk about it now. Something's going to happen with Laremy Tunsil and or Titus Howard. That I keep going back to. DeMeco said it at the combine. We got to fix our offensive line. Flat out.
Sure. Certainly.
Flat out.
Certainly.
Does Shaq Mason alone do that?
I don't think so.
No.
Although it does feel like you're in a place where, and we'll talk more about this, especially at noon.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like you're in a place where maybe you can still, like a couple of guards mm-hmm. is still a place where you can speak to. But you also probably will need the cap space. Also, speaking of cap space, not to be a little bird-brained here and just go with the win, but it would be interesting to find out if we get, or once we get it, because I'm sure eventually we will get some information on this, what the designation on this release is,
mm-hmm.
because if it's, you can get more savings if it's somehow designated as a post-June 1,
yeah.
as opposed to, and I imagine that would make the most sense if you're going to do that, and especially since it has to happen. That it's going to happen on the start of the new league year, that you can designate it as such,
right.
and create some more space.
And
for
they're
you.
Under the cap already, so they can do that a lot easier, I think.
I believe so. Don't give me the line. I'm going to be completely honest there. So, but yes, that'd be interesting. So I still feel like you could probably end up with two new offensive linemen even before
mm-hmm.
doing. Well, I guess that would then speak to Titus, because then you wouldn't have Titus a guard,
right.
and you probably are not moving him back
mm-hmm.
to tackle, I don't imagine. So. Yeah, I think you're right. There's probably still more to come mm-hmm. on this offensive line. But I'm happy, because you remember when we heard from DeMeco, there was one thing that he said in the walk-off, not just on the podium, where he was like, I think, you know, we can be better with the guys that we have, in essence. And that's paraphrasing. And I was like, ooh, does that mean that this team is going to somewhat stand pat? But no, the Texans seem to have made it clear that no, they're going to make a move to make this offensive line better, because they have to. It's the foundation of mm-hmm. what you're doing here. It's a phrase that I like saying, is that the game in its essence about blocking and tackling, and the blocking part was woeful last year, and it wasn't just, I'm glad because it feels like this is an acknowledgement that it wasn't just the scheme and two guys mm-hmm. in Bobby Slowick and Chris Stroster that made it so that they were having a hard time blocking up and protecting for CJ.
And remember this, which I think is going to be a big impact on what happens on the offensive line. They brought Cole Popovich, and I think that they kept Cole Popovich. And I think that speaks to maybe that sort of butting of heads, for lack of a better way to put it, between what they wanted to do on the offensive line and what Bobby Slowick commanded them to do. I think there was a real disconnect there, and maybe this is part of what Cole Popovich's influence, you know, is begetting here. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll
mm-hmm.
sorry about that. Yeah. We'll circle back around to offensive line. Or, I mean, we got a little time. We can continue in this space. So, I mean, at this point, does it feel like that means, hey, free agency is in play for the offensive line? Because that's kind of what I'm feeling at mm-hmm. this point, is that you're not just going to address this by just drafting an interior guard. Or maybe you could. Maybe this is the extent of the offensive line shift. You draft an interior guard and you go with some configuration that also just drops in, let's say, Gray Zabel at right guard and you move. That is a possibility here. But I'm interested, and I'm starting to feel with the urgency that that's not going to be it.
Yeah, I think it could be both. I think absolutely. Just like wide receiver now, after Christian Kirk gets here, you could draft a wide receiver. You could you could get one on free agency. I think both are in play, and maybe both will happen. Depends also on what you believe of in Juice Scruggs. Now, there's another D'Amico little, you know, hint. He said he, you know, and it wasn't just him, but he said he thinks that they can, his natural position is going to be center. So maybe, you know, Juice at center, you draft or you know, bring in a free agent at guard.
Right.
There's your two guards.
Right. Larry in there and paired with a text that we got here on the Jim Allen, the Texas Hammer text line. Brought us back to stadium talk because, you know, he's talking about how, hey, this might be a statement in that regard. How heavily do you weigh that in what we're seeing right now with the Shaq move and some of the other things that they're doing, going to acquiring Christian Kirk in tandem with, you know, the ever present push to try and get a renovation or whatever else happens with stadium?
I think it's a factor for sure. Now, how big of a factor, you know, if you're gonna come to the public with, hey, we need renovation, hey, we might need a new stadium, you better be a good team. You better be a team that has the interests and the support of the constituents, basically, because at its core, you know, and people always say, hey, you know, they're a private entity like any other, but no, they're not like any other business. They are a business that has your city's name across their chest and is broadcast to millions and millions of people. They represent the city. So there is that. You know, they give you that pride, sense of pride when they're doing well. So I think it helps that they're doing well and they're on an upward trajectory. But I don't know how big necessarily it is. They're probably going to try to do this anyway. It just helps.
All right. One more time for you. Shaq Mason is expected to be released by the Texans on the new league year, which starts on the 12th. So, yeah, that guard, that right guard spot, again, coming into focus. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
All right, let's get down on it here. Hour number three of the program. It wasn't that slick. It was very obvious. It was very obvious. That's the name of the song is Get Down On It. If you somehow didn't catch that, it's a Funky Friday here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Also, it is a news dump Friday, apparently. We've been getting some news, and I kind of keep our eyes out because with the legal tampering period hitting in the NBA on Monday, it seems like there's going to be some moving and shaking today. So we're watching that space. But one of the things that came down today for your Houston Texans is that guard Shaq Mason, they're moving on from him. He will be a cap casualty, or will he be a cap casualty? In fact, he will be released at the start of the new league year on Wednesday, March 12th. And there's been kind of questions about, first and foremost, right, before I get to the reporting that's out there and what that might mean for the Texans offseason when it comes to the offensive line. There's been kind of questions about, well, what kind of cut is this? Because there's the regular pre-June 1st cut designation, or I guess that's not a designation, it's just a regular release. That would come with a certain level of cap savings. And then if you manage to do this as a post-June 1 designation, that would come with some different savings. So I figured, since we still don't know what the designation would be, and I imagine that we'll find out on that day, on when the new league year turns over. At least that's what Texans Cap says, a dude who is very good and significantly more knowledgeable about all the cap machinations than I am.
I work going, man.
Man, it's nice to have him around in our city.
Busy. Yeah. It is really nice to have the capologists around. In fact, this is what the teams themselves, the GMs don't be doing this off the top of their head. They call up the guy like, all right, so run this by me one more time.
Yeah.
So I guess I will do the honors in this instance of trying to be that. When it comes to Shaq Mason, if he was a pre-June cut, just a regular release, it would be a savings of $2 million. And so if it was a post-June cut, June 1 cut rather, it is a savings of $9.4 million. And you have to think that it isn't worthwhile to make it a pre-June cut, that you want to maximize those savings if you can make it a post-June
designation. That's their whole strategy right now, is to find that money. Maybe some restructures are in the works. So the more money, the better. It seems like it's going to be an obvious post-June 1.
Yeah, so I feel like that's probably the way that it goes, and I'd be shocked if we do find that it's not that. I'd imagine, or I'd have to wonder, like, what the onus or impetus was, if it was just, we can't do this, which, to be fair, that could be enough, although someone from 3-4-6 said Mason wasn't the problem to the O-line, and
He was a big part of it.
Or maybe he wasn't
the only.
We want to just go with, like, a single solitary, but he was absolutely a problem on the offensive line. It was clear. It was clear that there was a level of decline in his play, even from last year, which you can make the argument that there had been a beginning of decline in that season as well.
Yeah.
And so you have that happen. So now it's evident that you need to make some moves, at least for right guard. But we were already in that place where we thought there need to be some moves. And now I turn you to Aaron Wilson. He was talking actually about the Christian Kirk edition of the Texans. They trade for Christian Kirk yesterday, or at least that will be official on Wednesday as well, but at least we get the news of that yesterday. And while he was talking about that, he talked about some other things, including this, when it comes to the Texans and their potential appetite for going into the free agent market for a guard.
I've checked on all the top guards that are available, guys not named Trey Smith, the Chiefs franchise player. So whether it's like a Will Fries or James Daniels or an Aaron Banks, doesn't look like they're in that market. So I could see them looking for a less expensive free agent guard. So watch for them to add some kind of depth piece in free agency and then possibly address it in the draft as well.
Okay, so first and foremost, that was before the release of Shaq Mason, or at least the news of the release of Shaq Mason. So first, let me ask you, do you think that is correct? And I kind of hate to be like in this place where I'm like, hey, this particular reporting is it. But like, I mean, especially now, or do you think that holds is probably a better way of saying?
Yeah, that's probably the safer way to say it, because, you know, that was the information that he had. I don't necessarily buy that for a couple of reasons. No disrespect to Aaron Wilson, but things have changed since then. Secondly, the Texans are incredibly, good at keeping their decision making in house and not letting it leak. Most of the reporting that we get on this is from the agent side or the player side, and some agents don't always know what the Texans are thinking either. They have a good hunch because they're in the circle of, who's negotiating with whom, who's talking with whom, et cetera. But they don't necessarily are plugged in. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I could see where the Texans absolutely do both. And if they get a deal with a higher echelon guard with the extra cap space, I could absolutely see them changing paths and maybe going for that. Ultimately, I think it comes down to this. I think there's going to be some major shifts, major changes on the Texans offensive line. And for anyone who might have fallen into that group of people say, well, Shaq wasn't the biggest problem. He was a problem for this team. Yeah, he gave up 10.5 sacks.
Is that good?
That's unacceptable. Okay. Completely unacceptable. But he wasn't the only problem. So here you go. Do you not believe? You clearly don't believe that Shaq Mason is what you want to go forward with. Do you believe that with Laremy Tunsil? Do you believe that with in terms of run? I know he can pass block. Do you believe that with Tytus Howard?
Tytus is going to be a tough sell.
Yeah.
No.
I think there's going to be another change, and I would have to point to Tytus Howard. Again, none of this is like, personal. I said, a couple of weeks ago, I thought Shaq Mason might be a victim of a cut, and he was. I think Tytus Howard falls in that same place.
Yeah, because the tough thing about this reporting, I'm like, if it's true, it means that you're putting all your eggs in the basket of the draft and then maybe getting something on the periphery.
Depth. I mean, he said depth.
Yeah. And I do wonder, when you say depth, because, all right, first and foremost, the guys that he's absolutely talking about, he mentioned Banks. He mentioned, who did he mention? The other guard. Oh, Will Fries, who is probably the best guard out there. He mentioned Mekhi Becton as well. Right. So those are the types of guys that he would say that would be out of the realm of possibility if this reporting is correct. I'm like, would that then include someone like a Kevin Zeitler?
Yeah.
From the Lions, who, he's older. I think he played on like a 1-year, $5 million deal thereabouts.
Yeah. Was he with the Ravens at one point?
Kevin Zeitler?
Yeah.
I believe so. I mean, he's been around for a little bit.
He's been around for a little bit.
And he, I mean, he is
solid, but he's a little older.
Solid, a little bit older, but that feels like something that if, although, does that then mirror at all the Shaq Mason edition? But right. It does feel like somebody that comes in and brings a certain level of like leadership. Cultural leadership. And then also an ability to do the job with some know-how that you would not be kind of being in the same place as a rookie or what have you, especially for the people that have concerns about what what the culture is in that locker room. But does that include that? Like, would that be something that we're talking about here as well? Because if that's not the case, I do start looking at how many of these guys or how many how much do you have available to even go to? And plus, like, I'd much rather you then clear up some space and try and get some of those guys.
Yes, because like, what does adding depth really do in terms of what your head coach said he wants? We got to get better. Does it make you like immediately, all right, they're better? Or does it do something that you've already done? You've got depth pieces that you can kind of shuffle around in case someone gets hurt or there's a lack of production, as we saw last year. You know, I wouldn't buy what he's saying in terms of what the hints are that we've gotten from the head coach. Like, we've got to get better. We've got to improve on what we got out of Shaq Mason, improve on what we've gotten out of Tytus Howard. Adding depth doesn't do that. So I think they could easily go for a bigger free agent target and draft. They could do both.
All right, so let's say that, okay, things are open, especially with this new move where you've absolutely opened right guard. We'll see if left guard is open. One of the things that you were talking about is D'Amico Ryan's statement that he believes that Juice Scruggs is better as a center. I don't know if that, I mean, in the offseason, you don't want to be beholden to the idea of, well, we need him at guard. You would like to be able to put yourself in the best circumstance. So let's go under the assumption that you need two guards, right? Before we go anywhere else. Let's say that you are able to free up the space and you go get you a top-notch free agent. Is there one that you want in particular? I know you mentioned Will Hernandez at one point. I know that, Show is like, just go get me the top one. Go get me Will Fries, the guy who had played at the Colts. He seems to be the best one available. Just go and make that happen because that is a clear point that you need to get better.
I think you need two starters, so I think you need to start with Will Fries.
Okay.
The Will Hernandez thing that I talked about, I think he's good value for what you could get, so it also depends on what you want to pay. But I think neither one of those things, if you can get Fries, terrific. And I think that fixes a lot of problems. I also think if you draft someone like Gray Zabel, who has been mocked to the Texans and has been, you know, really, really shooting up the chart, so to speak. I know they like him. John Harris talked about it. He likes him a lot. I think if you can do that, well, then it goes back to what do you do with Tytus Howard? Because if you can get Fries, I don't necessarily think it's like, okay, he's right guard, problem solved. You know, I think you still have an issue at guard and center. As much as they like Juice Scruggs, you know, he struggled at center.
He did, you but know? I do, but also one of the struggles that happens at center is one, being an inexperienced center, having the load of protections.
No,
and then two,
I get it.
Having a liability at left guard. I think that also
very
much.
They talked about communication.
Yes, that also, and communication was one of the things that it seems like you moved on from your offensive coordinator and your offensive line coach in because of, right? So hopefully you have those things in a better place, and maybe with a better left guard next to him, you find a little bit more consistency there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with that being the case, let's say you get your managed to pull off Will Fries. First, Tytus can't remain without having a contract restructure. Or like not even a restructure. Like we need to redo this.
Yeah.
Straight up, right? Yeah. Like I don't think he can remain on the contract that he has. So first
especially
and foremost.
Guard.
Yeah, absolutely guard, right? Because he was being paid pretty handsomely for a tackle. So if you move him to guard, I think it has to come with a change in salary. Is that something you'd be okay with?
Actually, no. And I think the biggest problem with this offensive line last year, you know, is they were, okay, I'll put it this way. They were not swarm. You know, they always throw all that swarmy.
Yeah.
You know, they were not swarmy kind of guys. Specifically, Shaq Mason and Tytus Howard. Specifically, even more so, Tytus Howard. I think Tytus is not necessarily cut from the cloth that they want. I think, you know, they're trying to not just find more nimble guys, but that's the other thing. These were big dudes. Shaq Mason is a big, big dude. Not exactly prototypical of the type of offense that Bobby Slowick ran and to a large degree, Nick Caley as well. I don't know if Tytus Howard is that.
Mm-hmm.
Tytus Howard is a big dude that maybe not always is, you know, gets you the attitude that you want, the swarmy type stuff. So I think, you know, I think Tytus Howard, if he's back this year, I think we're going to see more of the same. And, okay. I don't think that's what they want.
No, I mean, that is very clearly not what they want. They've made it abundantly clear on various occasions that that there it needs to be significantly better. D'Amico Ryan said it clearly that the number one objective is protecting for C.J. Stroud. So, okay, you move on from Tytus Howard. Is that basically where we're
putting
that's
where it? I would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that's the case, that necessitates drafting probably in the first round your offensive lineman. Like, I understand that getting the addition of Christian Kirk, and we'll talk more about this as well, probably frees you up to, you know, move around in the kind of some of the ways that you're going about it. But it feels like you probably need to get a starter caliber offensive lineman.
Yes.
And yes, you could maybe get that in the second round, but I feel like the first round, when you draft the first rounder, you want a guy who you know can be an impact player. And that feels like the level of urgency that they have on the offensive line.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, you know, first round pick would be much more, there would be much more urgency to get an interior offensive lineman. Now, you could still argue second round if they do bring in a big-time free agent, which is why I think they should aim higher anyway. Because if they
you think even if they bring in, when we've done Fries, the Will Fries, do you think that they can get away with doing a second round guard maybe to play left or
Left or right? I mean, we'll you know, it depends
depending on
how they do it. Simply because I think that you could maybe have a little more wiggle room with some of the guys that are already here that are going to be back. You know, what, you know, Shaq Mason, Jared Patterson played center, you know, so you could, it would be a little bit more wiggle room to maybe take that chance on a second rounder. But, but absent of that, I think it's a first round guard. Yeah.
All right. So that is the idea of like a draft and a sign. Is there any way in your mind that you get two in free agency, like two offensive linemen in free agency?
Yeah, I think that could happen. I absolutely think that could happen. Maybe the upper echelon guy and then the value guy that I was talking about that you could take a chance on, you know, have that, like Aaron Wilson said there, that depth kind of guy. I'm not a big fan of it, but there would be better competition.
It would be a lot of investment money into that space. And
what do you do with Tunsil?
It's a tough question. Somebody was asking earlier, like, what do you think you could get for Tunsil in a trade? And I don't really have a good answer for you in that regard. Like, he is still, as you mentioned, a very highly rated and regarded pass blocker. But the run blocking, it can be a little susceptible. It got better over the course of the season. And, you know, sometimes you have some penalty things that pop up. So I don't know exactly
how
that ultimately...
You don't want to, restructure his contract and extend him.
I don't know, and that they
can't do that. That might be out the question.
You can't do that.
But as they're trying to find space, that might be one of the places where you can do it.
Yeah,
and so that gets a little uncomfortable. I personally, I'm with you. I would not want to do that, but I also don't know that you want to trade him and then also try and find more opportunities, or you have to then reimagine the offensive line even more.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that might be the bridge too far. But if they've already taken the first step in announcing or, you know, designating that they're going to release Shaq Mason at the start of the league year. We're, you know, waiting to see what else that they get going. Free agency or that legal tampering period, I should say, starts on Monday. And it feels like they are well in place to be active in that. I'm just interested to see what level. If are they going to go at the high level and get someone like Will Fries? Or is the reporting going to hold true that they're not actually in on those high-end guys? Or maybe...
Well, they
maybe
have to bring in one high-end guy.
Maybe they hadn't been in before. Yeah. Now this puts them in the place once they've officially made the decision to reach out to those types of... those guys, or at least legally reach out to... Maybe that's also the thing. they haven't reached out to them because, remember, Nick Caserio, when he was...
They would never do anything like that.
That gives you the impression that they do this above board. They're like, no, we will wait until
certainly
the time period.
Does give you an impression, doesn't it?
We will wait till the time period at which it is designated for us to be able to talk to free agents, and no moment sooner. We'll see what that looks like come next week. But you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610.
Josh Hader coming? Josh Hader might have been walking in here.
In the building. That'd be cool.
All right. Christian Kirk, I believe, and you can jump in with your thoughts on this, Nick. I think before you even, because hopefully you thought about it over the break, Think about the other teams in the league and their number two receivers. I think Christian Kirk is most definitely a number two receiver. And again, if he stays healthy, that's the same thing with Hill, Nico Collins. It's the same thing with Tank. It's the same thing with Cooper Kupp. That's the same thing with other guys that Tyler Lockett. It's the same thing with other guys that have had some injury situations. Debo Samuel, who the Texans clearly were at least in talks with. But if he stays healthy, I think he is clearly a number two. And for some reason, Luke, it seems like some, I'm not saying all, but some within the Texans fan base don't see him as that. And see it, and I've seen a lot of people, they get it, they need to get another guy. And I'm like, I think they need to get another guy. But I don't think it's like, hey, man, they've got to get somebody over him. I think he is going to be a really, really big-time slot receiver, again, if he stays healthy. And in what this offense looks like it's going to be, the slot receiver is somebody that is going to be a big part of it. And he has been really, really, really good in Arizona and Jacksonville when he's been healthy, which is a very fair thing. But no, this to me is not a third receiver. Again, start matching up some of the number two receivers. It's not maybe what you think. I feel like when people think number two receivers, they're thinking Jaylen Waddle and T. Higgins.
Yeah, the exceptions.
Or Devontae Smith. Yeah. And I think he is, I don't know, I don't think he's in the category of maybe Higgins and Waddle, because especially Higgins and Waddle's got big play ability much more than he does. But I think he's in the range of that of the guys. I bet you there aren't 10 number two receivers in the league that are more accomplished or even better than him. Like that you would look at. Because I only think there are two in the AFC, and then you have to go to the NFC to me. So, yes, he is not Devontae Adams. He is not DK Metcalf. But you already have Nico Collins. He is to me, a legit number two receiver.
I'm with you. Again, just assume as long as he's healthy, which is the big thing. But if you were getting Christian Kirk off of his season three seasons ago, I would put this duo right up there with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase in terms of a 1-2 punch. The concern, the problem is just because of these injuries the last two seasons. And so I think some of the dislike comes from a couple factors. One is the injuries. He's only played, you know, half season here the last 2 years. I think two
very
is
fair.
He hasn't played on good teams. I know that Jaguars team made it to the playoffs. They had the Chiefs on the ropes. But he's played for the Cardinals in the early years of Kyler Murray, and they weren't really getting to the playoffs, I think just once, the Jaguars. And it almost goes back to the whole Barkley thing of, like, you know, you don't pay attention to these smaller markets. So I think a lot of people aren't just, you know, they're just not as familiar with the game. And I think the other aspect, too,
is Christian Kirk has come here to Houston and
that's fair.
And it's true. Kicked their asses multiple times when he's playing with the Jags.
Duval.
Certainly a good point. I think another aspect, too, is he kind of became a punchline when he signed that huge contract with the Jaguars that made him, like, one of the highest paid receivers. And everyone's thinking, you know, why are you paying this guy that much? So I think when you get paid that much, that also ups the... He's getting paid, or at least he was getting paid as a number one wide receiver. So I think that ups the expectations of this... now this expectation or this perception of Kirk of he's getting paid all of this money, but his numbers are only this. He must not be that good, or he must be underachieving. So I think those things are kind of working against Kirk. But I would also say this. I saw this stat earlier, and again, stats are a dime a dozen. It might not mean much, but his yards per route run put him 45th in the league last year, you know, when he was healthy. So 45th would put you right up there with the number two receivers, but it placed him on that list right between DK Metcalf, who I know a lot of Texans fans wanted, and right ahead of Jordan Addison, who is one of the better number two receivers in the league. So just one stat, but it's good company that he keeps in that area in terms of his effectiveness, the amount of yards he gets compared to the amount of routes he runs. He was right up there with DK Metcalf and Jordan Addison last year, and that's the type of guy you would love as a number two receiver.
Yep. To me, I think this team, like, bam, right there, those guys between him and Nico especially for the roles that they play. I think they play off each other well. I think they are big and good for C.J. Stroud. Now, I think you just need a speed guy that could get down the field and kind of, you know, one, go make big plays and kind of take coverage away from those two. That's to me the next step. But that doesn't mean that player has to be DK Metcalf, right? That player could be a Joshua Palmer, could be a third one. Or to me, which would make a lot of sense, why don't you maybe slide in the draft? Mm-hmm. You know, the golden kid from Texas, a lot of people have talked about. That could be somebody maybe you groom to put out on the outside, and then you hope that he is becoming a big play guy, a speed guy that's a third guy. Because I'm with it. I don't think that's Xavier Hutchinson.
No.
Like that's not him. He's not separating like that. I don't think. And obviously, I think Mechie's more of an inside slot type of receiver. But this to me, as somebody just texted in, it's less about him being a number two than that he plays in the slot. People want an option other than Nico running in the secondary. And I agree, there needs to be another person there. But you can make big plays from the slot. You can run through the secondary. I know y'all remember Ladd McConkey's ass. He was coming from the slot, running past people. And there is, if you go watch it, Christian Kirk has done that as well. I think what you have said, and I think Tyler was saying that too, somehow it feels like there's a portion of the Texans fan that, one, got into their minds that the Texans needed something closer to a number one receiver, and or got themselves excited for or put themselves in their mind for a Davante Adams or a DK Metcalf. And I just legit don't think you needed that. Right? I was kind of slow and waiting to get to the table about Nico. And yes, Nico is a bona fide top half number one receiver in this league the way he's played the last 2 years. So I think you got that guy there. I don't think you needed another one. And I feel like some people got that in their minds. And then you saw Christian Kirk, ill. Like, that's what I feel like with some people is that there's just an ill thing to it. Like, do you think, I'm asking both of you this and people you're listening. You think if it was Cooper Kupp, That they traded for Cooper Kupp for the 7th round pick. Do you think it would be more excitement?
I think so. I think that's a bigger name brand.
But then once you go look at what they have done,
I'd rather have.
Yeah, Kupp. And I get what Luke's saying, but I don't think that's the right reaction.
But I think what Luke is saying, and he said it earlier, is I think in people's minds they like right now it's Diggs too. I think in people's minds. I think people would separate Cooper Kupp and Diggs far from or at least a good distance with Christian Kirk. I think people would have Christian Kirk third in that grouping, and I damn sure don't believe that's the case.
Yeah.
And all three of them have injury issues.
Right. I'm with you. I think this might be an absurd comparison. I think it's almost like the guy who's been married for a long time, and they think it's their marriage that's holding them back from dating like supermodels or whatever it is. Oh, if only I was a single guy, I could be with Sydney Sweeney, whoever, pick your name. And then it comes because of that, you come to kind of resent that relationship, or you come home and like, oh, this is the person I'm coming home to. I could be out dating such and such. And so it's this idea of like, oh, man, DK Metcalf, Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams, all these names out there that you talk yourself into a tizzy. Like, oh, we're going to get one of these guys. And then you get Christian Kirk, and it seems like it's this letdown. Like you're settling for him when you could have DK Metcalf on your team. When realistically, I don't know how much of a option or possibility that truly was for the Texans to ever really be in running for DK Metcalf.
Especially the asking price of a first, a third, and $30 million contract.
Yeah.
That damn sure wasn't it. So that's not the case. All right, coming up, T-Mill's best bets. Hey, Chris Santiago held him down last night. Chris went for 6 bets and got 4 of them. So we are at 66% with Chris. 63 for the week, 66 yesterday. You're over 60. You got to finish this damn thing out. All right, welcome back in as we continue to the drive. Clint is in the building. Tyler is out with a migraine, which is tough because a former Aggie, Christian Kirk, is
ain't nobody got no money like Texas A&M.
There you go. He's going to be a Houston Texan. He's been traded over. He's going to be a Houston Texan. And I don't know if this directly rolls into that, but they did free up some cap space with the deal that they were able to restructure with Nico Collins, freeing up about $10 million. 16 and a half is what they're going to be owed, what they're going to have to be to owing Christian Kirk for this 1 year. So it is not long term. And when you look at this, Clint, what else? What else are they going to do, right? As you said, it's not done. It can't be done, right? They haven't touched the interior offensive line. And I've said they at least have to go and get something, at least one major piece up front, which will cost them cash. I know you've said a couple. You've talked about you want a center and a guard, which I ain't mad at you. I just don't think that's what they're about. But that's what they have to do. And then it's the thought of, all right, well, how are they going to free up space? As you said, they held maybe another receiver as well. How are they going to free up some more space? They have some space, but they have the ability, Clint, to go do this with other members of the team like they did with Nico Collins, turn some of that money into salary cap. I'm sorry, into signing bonus money, and then lower their cap hit. So now it's the thought of who else is going to be available to do this. And I do, one of the ways, Clint, right off the bat is, I believe that is the case, they can just really cut Shaq Mason and make $13, $14 million for him.
No, it's not that big. There's some guaranteed money on there. I think they can save roughly $2 or $3 million by cutting him. That's it.
Is that what it is?
There's him, and I wish I could remember off the dome right now. I can't remember. There's him and one other player on the Texans that they could cut, and it would clear, I think, max $4 or $5 million in terms of whether they kept him or not. So that's the way I read it. I don't know exactly all the details, but there's really, when it comes to cutting and saving money, they're pretty limited in their options, I think. Enough they would, but you could cut Tytus Howard and I think it would you could save $2 million, I think was the other name that was on that list I saw. So there's some space to the Shaq Mason deal, you might as well, right? I don't care if it's $500,000. I mean, the Shaq Mason deal, I think it's at the end of the day, it's probably a move that they end up making. I think if they end up freeing up cap space, though, I think it's going to come more in the form of restructuring deals than it is cutting guys and getting that money.
Yeah, one more year away from being able to just completely.
Shaq, you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. One more year away before they could completely let him go. But they would make some. They would save some money. Would let him go. Listen, Christian Kirk comes in. He immediately jumps to be the third highest paid player on the team next year in terms of money that he's going to get. And for me, if Tytus Howard and Laramie Tunzel to me as well, but especially if Tytus Howard is going to be on the team, really both of them, then we got to restructure them. Like, restructure to drop some money, because those are the two highest ones that you can bring that can bring money into with him. I'm sorry, he becomes a fourth one with Danielle Hunter.
Yeah.
Hunter is a little bit ahead of him. Hunter is just 1 year, though. He's on a 1 year deal. What you could do with him is do a new deal and bring his cap number down if you wanted to do a new deal with Danielle Hunter. That is another way where it, instead of a $23 million hit, that you are now bringing it down potentially. So that is a way that they can do that. But there are multiple guys they can go to. They could go to, and but the two guys at the top, Laramie and Tytus, they're going to be on the team. Those are two guys they can definitely do something similar to what they did
with Nico Collins.
Yeah, look, I got to think that there's definitely some flexibility with those guys. I think there's probably some flexibility with Dalton Schultz. I'd imagine there's probably some flexibility with Joe Mixon. I don't know all the details or what that looks like, but we're talking about creating as much cap space as you possibly can, and the bigger contract guys that have multiple years left on their contract are the ones that I would think are the easiest to restructure. I'd be shocked if the Texans are through in free agency, and I'd be shocked if the Texans are through restructuring deals to create space.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're going to do that. They're going to add more, the ability to add more money to this team to be able to make more deals for them to be able to strengthen this roster. As we said earlier in the week, man, there is no reason to believe that they are not going to be able to add the pieces to this team. The cap, if they want to, they're going to be able to fix this thing. All right, as we continue the big story, Christian Kirk, we'll dive into that more in the 5 o'clock hour. Remember, and I will be right on this. Remember, in the 5 o'clock hour will be your final opportunity. Leaders make mistakes sometimes as well, but I will be able to make sure we have a winner in the 5 o'clock hour. The last chance, the last opportunity of the week, your chance to win 4-pack of tickets to see Journey coming up in just a bit. Before we continue here with the big news, again, if you're just jumping in, the Texans got another receiver. They have made a trade in division with Jacksonville to bring in Christian Kirk, former Texas A&M Aggie, former Jacksonville Jaguar. They have brought him in. We will continue that as the top story rolling through. Clint, by the way, this other story in sports, you see this? Old Stephen A. Smith got $100 million.
Got $100 million, huh?
They've been talking about
there ain't many in that media game that's worth it, but he is. I don't always agree with Stephen A.
Five-year, $100 million deal with ESPN is what.
Yeah. Yeah, that's big money. I'm a fan, man. So it makes sense. It makes sense. If anybody's worth it, it's him.
Yeah. That is just wild. Boy, how he has pulled this thing off and turned this up. That Skip Bayless is looking at him. What the hell was that?
I wonder, I'm going to assume that includes his podcast and all that kind of stuff. Even though
his podcast is separate.
Well, it was. I mean, he's on record. Yeah. I don't. It may still be. I mean, he is on record of saying, you know, really giving Pat McAfee a lot of credit in a sense of letting folks, you know, opening the door for folks to be able to do their own thing and make their own money on the side. But you know, Pat made his own money on the side and did his own thing, and then all of a sudden, ESPN came in and bought it all up. Not all of it, but paid a boatload of money to have it. I wonder what all is included in a 5-year, $100 million deal with Stephen A. I got to believe that there's more than just being on, you know, more than just the show.
Well, it is. Hell, he's on everything.
Yeah. Well, ain't nobody working
NBA,
harder.
NBA stuff. I don't think his podcast is included because He gets off into a completely different other space that I don't think Disney would want to be a part of.
That's a good point. He's even dabbling off into politics.
He's going
now.
Hardcore into politics.
Yeah.
They ask him like random questions too, from Twitter questions.
Oh, yeah. They'd be real super nasty.
Yeah, it gets a little weird.
Yeah, it gets a little weird. He's doing a little too much. But man, he's done it. He spun this sucker into $100 million, I mean, how many Texans? Where is he ranked on the Texans? I think he's fourth.
There's only three of them making over 20, right? Titus, Laramie, and
Daniil Hunter. I think he slides in right above Christian Kirk.
There you have it.
And he ain't done.
There you have it.
5 years, boy. I'm telling you, man, this business, man, we got to figure this thing out.
You got to be crazy.
Got to figure this thing out. Yeah, he's pulled it off and set this. Like, he was celebrating when Pat got that deal.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I know it's coming. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness.
Got that thing.